anecdotal, you've heard some direct information and evidence, you've heard about personal experience. I travel around the world, I work with the Uyghurs, who have perpetrated, over a million of them have been killed by the genocidal dictatorship in Beijing. I work with the Tibetans. Last year, with the China Nexus, my author Benedict Rogers and I presented the China Nexus to His Holiness the Dalai Lama in Darussalam. That was a great honor. His Holiness stood for interviews for that book. I worked with some of the most well-versed, some of the former intelligence people, some of the smartest people in the world who understand what's going on with China's Communist Party. I bring some of those voices to the table, and that's what I do as a publisher. I bring here today some experts, people with real perspective, but again, this mission relies on you and you being informed and understanding what's going on. So for the RCMP and the other intelligence people that are in the room, let's make it perfectly clear, it's important that we defend our democracy. It's time now for us to stand up or we will lose this battle. So now we're going to go into the panel, and the subjects I want to talk about is we're going to go back to 1998. We're going to talk a little bit about Sidewinder, and we're going to talk about your first real encounter, because Gary was in Hong Kong in the High Commission. He knows the first immigration fraud, the same type of immigration fraud that came to this island with the PNP program. That is one of the biggest conduits to the Chinese Communist Party gaining entrance access to Canada, was PI, cash for access, instant landed immigrant status. Only 3 in 10 actually showed up here in the province. So that's where it all starts. And let's go back to Sidewinder. And Michelle, why don't you start off in terms of your experience there, what you saw and what you brought to the government.
Yeah. Putting you back a little bit into perspective, because eventually we're talking about the big picture. We're talking about the world, we're talking about the confrontation that is taking place, but ultimately you're here to hear about what happened in PEI and how it affected PEI. Back in the early 90s, if, I don't know if you recall, 1997, Hong Kong was to return to China mainland. And that was a source of preoccupation for a lot of Hong Kongers. So a lot of people wanted to come Canada. Mr. Mulroney was very, very involved with Hong Kong, was receiving money from Hong Kong, and was participating by creating a class of immigrant that did not exist before, which is entrepreneur immigrant. So basically, if you had $200,000 or more, you could invest right here in Canada and literally buy your Canadian citizenship. Buy being a so-called entrepreneur. But the problem is that we witnessed that among this guy, because very little check and background check was done, a lot of triads, a lot of organized crime was capable to come in at the same time. And that was confirmed by Brian McAdam and Gary, that were already in Hong Kong and witnessing this to happen. So that's what led us to start to investigate a little bit more this immigration stream that was coming to us. But it was an extremely lucrative exercise at the same time for the government. And, good part, they were going to share that with the provinces. That's where now it started to apply exactly here in PEI, is that with the complicity of some of the elite in Ottawa, the elite in PEI saw a beautiful opportunity to receive hundreds of millions of dollars, literally, that was distributed to a handful of people only. It didn't benefit the island, it benefited few opportunities. When we investigated here, we saw exactly the same problem, the same situation taking place. When they are here, some of them, not all, some are legitimate, some are really people who would like to sort of establish themselves here, open a business and do business. But when you look at the ratio, these are facts. These are not speculation or conspiracy. When you look at the ratio of the number of people that came through PEI, paid their way in, and stayed in PEI to benefit PEI and profit, make profit to the island, the ratio doesn't jive. It doesn't work. Too many people left to go in other places in the country. That was just the port of entry. That was just the way to get in. And the politicians were on the take. Period.
And Gary, you know, Gary's experience with respect to triads, and he actually wrote a book for CSIS and the RCMP on triads. And you were experiencing this and seeing how this loan came into the country and business tycoons tied to triad organizations.
The bottom line when all this was going on, and I'm going to show you how one person can make a difference. Between Brian and I, it was a daily, almost daily, I wrote probably 4 or 5 briefs to RCMP headquarters talking about triads that were, had applied and committed to the country. We had an immigration department that actually turned a blind eye. I have no doubt some of them got the red packets. And it was a free-for-all. Well, we got to let them in. We got $200,000. And I was appalled. As people will soon find if you read my book, I wasn't a typical RCMP. I didn't, just because somebody said something didn't mean it was right. And so I challenged that to a point where I got cooperation from the Royal Hong Kong Police working side by side with them. And here's a sad fact. When I first went down to meet with the head of the Triad Bureau, he said, well, yeah, it's nice to meet you, but we don't work with the Canadians. I said, what do you mean you don't work with the Canadians? He said, well, anybody that's been here before you, they come down, shake your hand, we never see them again, and we give them all this intelligence about triads, and nobody does anything, so we just quit giving it to you. And I said, well, I will do what I can to make a difference. So I had a staff, Brian wasn't able, because of the level of the condition, wasn't able to hold off the immigration officer. But I could under criminal, being part of a criminal organization. So I had a file cabinet moved in my office, which contained immigration files, and I just refused to give them back. And it turned out that I found out, thanks to our former Barbara McDougal, God bless her soul, she had allowed a number of things to happen. One of them was under that it was not an offense to be a member of an organized crime group or be affiliated with an organized crime group. That was not a prohibitive ground to come to our wonderful country. Makes sense. I mean, we like to have our criminals in the place, maybe. So I was appalled. So I knew there was a new immigration bill in the works to be written, and I wrote ad infinitum, trying to get the RCMP off to big fat butts in Ottawa. We pushed this. But commissioners and deputy ministers, so how dare you speak out against your political leaders? So thank God for the news. I had a journalist that I knew in Southern News, and I went to him, I gave him the whole story, and I said, only one condition. You've got to say your source was out of Hong Kong. You can't say out of Hong Kong because my career will be over. Say it's out of Ottawa. Ottawa, you're too stupid then to investigate and find out who it was. It went in. It raised what I'm hoping the media does today. It raised enough concern in Ottawa that in the 11th hour, they put in a section that it was enough. You could not come to this country as a member of an organized crime group or affiliated to. So it can happen. The problem is, though, how do we get our political leaders, and I thank you very much, Dominique. It's such a pleasure to hear somebody that's got the same views as all of us, because that's few and far between, sadly, in politics. We've just got to hold our political leaders to account. We do. It's what we're seeing, the triads that we got in this country, and believe me, we have triads. I have pictures of premiers, I have pictures of chiefs of police standing, shaking hands in front of triad altars in this country, with known triad figures. Now, for you and I, it doesn't probably mean anything. But if you saw that same picture standing in front of the Hells Angels crest, I guarantee every one of you in the room would say, why is he doing that? Well, all the Chinese citizens, Canadian Chinese citizens have seen that. What message does that send? They're in the pocket of triads. And believe me, I have spoken to a lot of Chinese communities because they are under siege here in Canada. The fact that Chinese police officers are here, that's a fact. I don't care whether they're suing or not, they're here. And we've allowed them to be here. That started prior to my leaving the force in 2003, because I was the head of the financial crime program, and I met with a whole bunch of Chinese officials that got sort of put off from the commissioner's office down to change me to deal with them, and they were saying how they wanted us to go out and seize all these individuals, because they were economic criminals in China. What that means is they embarrassed the ruling party and they wanted them back so they could throw them in jail and never be heard from again. And that's how this has all started, and we let it happen.
And so moving forward over the last few years, obviously the awareness about the Chinese Communist Party, all different levels of hybrid warfare has come to the forefront. And we're talking a little bit about what some of these hybrid warfare tactics are here today. The use of the triads, things that we call lawfare, the use of the Confucius Institutes, disinformation operations, which I just gave a symposium on in Montreal to the leader community so they can engage, so that they can fight back against disinformation operations by the Chinese Communist Party. But some of the greatest disinformation operations are the photo ops that key individuals take with our prime ministers and our leaders. And some of those are in the mosaic effect, including a known triad, actually probably the head of the United Front in Canada, standing posing with the prime minister of the country. But this has happened with the former prime minister before Trudeau as well. So remember, this is not just a one-party system. This is not, you know, this is not about Justin Trudeau. This is not about the Conservative Party. It's not about any party in PEI. Transnational repression by Chinese Communist Party is here. And in your province, Dominic, you've probably seen some of this, of the transnational repression. Because actually the mosaic effect is a counterintelligence operation neither dissuaded nor condoned by Five Eyes, actually working with people within the Chinese diaspora community, the Uyghur community, who want to be supported by the Canadian government but felt afraid and were oppressed by the Chinese Communist Party here in our own country, allowing them to be intimidated on an ongoing basis, threatened with their lives, threatening their family back home with murder. In some cases, they killed them. And I want to let you know that that's the regime we're talking about. Tom, just pick up on that a little bit.
Yeah, that is maybe think of something that I experienced when I first raised the issues around the Confucius Institute in New Brunswick schools, that I had a ethnically Chinese woman who lived in my constituency reach out to me through an intermediary to meet somewhere other than my constituency office or my ministerial office after dark, because she was afraid of what would happen if anyone knew she was talking to. This is in New Brunswick, which is certainly a lot more multicultural now than it was 20 years ago, has a much larger ethnically Chinese population, isn't large enough to have, as far as we know, one of the Chinese Communist Party unofficial police stations operating on our territory. But at the same time, this woman was so spooked that she had to go through those levels of security to raise concerns around something that I think is a good example of how we're running into a crisis in Canada right now. Because at the same time as I was trying to kick the Confucius Institute out of our schools, we had pressure on our Minister of Local Government to introduce a law allowing folks who came to Canada, who had permanent residency, but not yet citizenship, to be able to vote in provincial and municipal elections. So this was seen as being a nice way of introducing people to Canadian, to New Brunswick democracy, to opening the doors to our country, showing how freedom can work in practice for people who maybe weren't even going to become citizens. The woman who I talked to spoke for a number of people who reached out through similarly complicated means because of the fear they were under, to say, in the name of God, please don't do this. that, I think, is where we're running into this cultural clash right now. Whereas we want to be opening and open and welcoming to newcomers, including to people trying to escape dictatorships. But that law, as Dean just said, would have exposed that woman's family back in China to massive amounts of pressure and intimidation, up to and possibly including arrest, torture, and death. And it seems so far away from our little legislature in Fredericton talking about those issues in those ways. But we have to remember, whenever we're talking about what we do as engaged and active Canadian citizens, that we have rights most people cannot dream of. And it's up to us to use them so that when someone becomes a Canadian citizen, those rights actually mean something, unlike a Chinese passport, which is basically just a ticket to an incarceration camp if you speak out of line. So things like that, where what looks like a progressive, open move is actually something moved backward, I think is how the rubber meets the democratic road for us as Canadian citizens. So let's stand for an open country, but a country that stands by it and for its values, not for one that gets pushed around and used by foreign interference operations.
Yeah, I think with Michelle and what they want to do on that. So thank you. I just things for Chinese immigrants or Hong Kong immigrants, Uyghurs, who've come to this country, is the lack of support that they've received from police services to protect them. They're running away from a communist dictatorship, but only find themselves to be oppressed on an ongoing basis.
There's a reason for that.
And there's a reason. So go ahead.
The reason is because we do not have a clear definition of what foreign interference is about.
Yeah.
You see, a whistleblower, or blowers, came out in October 2022 to the Globe and Mail and Global News and gave documents from CSIS, original documents, saying we did advise Mr. Trudeau that the election in 2019-2021 were affected by Chinese foreign interference, 11 writings.
Yeah.
We told him. Following that, Mr. Trudeau negated that, said, no, I don't recall that CSIS told me that, or anything like this. The law, CSIS Act, is extremely clear. You can only advise Minister of Public Safety and the Prime Minister. And the documents that leaked were very clear. He was told. So in the winter and spring of 2023, a couple months later, close to 350 witnesses, expert witnesses, and we were part of that, came to testify in front of four different parliamentary committees. We all said, yes, Chinese foreign interference has been observed for the last 30 years. All the prime ministers were told, one after the other. But Mr. Trudeau went on to sort of drag and drag, refuse, finally wanted to offer a special rapporteur, which happened to have to sort of quit at the end because he was found to be inadequate because he was a family member or friends.
He was elite captured.
And is an elite captured also. Then to drag all summer, then eventually in the fall say, okay, we're going to go with a public inquiry. But all the information about if I was told or not will have to be kept secret because that ceases national security. So you're going to find out. And we'll have a judge, also a friendly friend, that will be running the show. And by the way, the Uyghur and the Hong Kong people pulled out because they're saying three of the elected officials that are known to be agent of Beijing are allowed to be on the committee and to interrogate the witnesses that will come. But at one point we're saying, okay, how much do you need to know more? 350 experts came to you and said, yes, we have been observing that for the last 30 years. Meanwhile, we don't have a law that defines what foreign interference is about. So therefore, the strategy that we use right here with the politician in behind, with the wine and dine exercise and the recruitment that they've done, made them addict of Chinese money, literally. They became addicts, and they made a fortune. And meanwhile, if you want to really understand, I'm going to give a chance to the other, if you want to really understand how the Chinese government thinks about the rest of the world, two things you have to do. Read The Art of War again. That was written 2,000 years ago by Sun Tzu, a general who explained the power of influence. 2,000 years ago, you know the expression? They wrote the book? They wrote the book 2,000 years ago. They understand exactly. You're not going to teach them how to suck a net. They invented it. Second, learn the game of Go. The game of Go, search it. It's an ancient game, millennium old, and it's all about capturing territory. So the grab of land, the grab of territory, the grab of spaces, business, political, and military, extremely important in your strategy. Extremely important. And here, you let it happen.
You'd be like to have if you want. Gary, you want
to? Just, I can be very short. Just sort of following up on that. Some of you will have read stuff, and I'm not going to get into a lot of detail and take too long, but the Belt and Road Initiative is something that is openly spoken about by the Chinese.
Teaching.
If you go to any of the Caribbean islands, and I can name a number of them, and look at their brand new airports, who do you think built them? It's the Chinese. What do you think that has done for them? Well, the Caribbean island can't pay for it. So guess what? They're under the Chinese influence. And I can name a number of them. Africa, they're doing exactly the same thing. That is part of the Belt and Road Initiative. PEI, coming here, getting land, is part of the Belt and Road Initiative. Spreading their tentacles. One other point I want to make, and that's to follow up just how insidious what we're seeing is going on and how we're so naive to it. I was in London, I worked occasionally down in London, Ontario, and the bonds field was going on. And there was a couple of Chinese couple in from British Columbia, Richmond. And as you know, Richmond is, I think, 54%, if I'm not mistaken now, Asian. We were talking, and when they realized I've been in Hong Kong and that I understood a little bit about the culture, this lady said to me, "Why aren't more police officers in Canada trained?" I said, "Well, yeah, I accept that, but what are you getting at?" She says, "Do you realize that every business, Chinese business, has to pay protection money to organized crime? Every Chinese business. I have no reason to doubt her." But isn't that a sad statement? However, after seeing what Toronto did, I don't know if you saw that, where your best protection now for looking after your car is make sure your keys are at the front door, and so they don't have to break into your house. I don't know, I kind of agree with Clint Eastwood. There should be a sign outside that says, are you a religious person? Because I'd suggest you get it right with Jesus, because you're going to visit St. Peter's real quick.
Look at the island, et cetera, a little bit more fully. And of course, my experience in working with the South Pacific and Solomon Islands, I watched the exact same thing happen where 39 of the 50 politicians that were part of the parliamentary, we'll call it a council, they're running a parliamentary democracy, but 39 of the 50 had received a direct payment from the Chinese Communist Party, from the council. Direct cash in the bank. When I enlightened the State Department about PEI last week in Montreal, I talked specifically about the islands on the East Coast. Barbados comes to mind. And the funny story about Barbados is that the president, you know, they switched. They used to be a Commonwealth country. But now they've renounced the Queen. That's okay. They can do that. Except guess what? They showed up with $2 million and gave it to the president. He said, to the State Department, what do you expect me to do? They're giving me cash in the bag. What's America offering me? So that's what you're up against, just to let you know. And this thing is happening, and it's happened all over the world with a lot more than $2 million a lot.
But it's important to stress. It's really, really, really important to stress, you know, not generalize too much.
Yeah.
To the point where everybody looks, we're going to the same ground. That's not the case at all. That's not the case at all. We're talking about professional investigation that was a word taken and done in order to be capable to identify exactly the chain of command, the chain of direction that was taking place. Unfortunately, in this exercise, we revealed that a lot of politicians were part and accomplice
they became agent of influence, what Stalin used to call the useful idiots. But it's exactly what is taking place. And it's not all businesses that are necessarily agent of the spyware. That's not the question of what we're talking about. But we need to be capable to conduct due diligence. We need to be capable to be very, very astute of what's going on. And partly the politicians. But the problem is that because I want to come back to what's going on here in this island. There's a lack of accountability. There's a lack of accountability, and it's been going on for a long period of time.
Well, it's you know, true of around the world, and the accountability here, accountability in Ottawa. The move towards, you know, embracing China was that it was going to be a win-win kind of deal for all of us. And the Americans, and, you know, we outsourced our manufacturing a great deal to China because they could deliver it to us cheaper, more cost-effectively, and we bought into that, and it lowered our inflation. But at the same time, they're using forced and slave labor to actually produce the products that you're buying. And that's why they're in the United States, where they're really starting to tackle these things.
Some
forced labor. With weaker forced labor. It is happening. And we have to be aware of these things that are happening. The Americans are putting in a weaker forced labor prevention act. It's getting some teeth at stopping shipments that they can, you know, ensure that they're actually coming from forced labor areas. And we work closely with leaders here in Canada, the United States, to ensure that kind of legislation gets through. In Canada, there will be a new bill. Ottawa is waking up and doing some things. MP John McKay, a great individual on human rights and has fought for the Uyghurs and the Tibetans for a long, long time. There's some new legislation coming up, and it is welcome legislation. So they're finally getting some answers. It's starting to come together. So just on trying to talk about engagement a little bit, and this whole thing, you know, we understand transnational oppression against Chinese language people who come here wanting that freedom of democracy, Tibetans, Uyghurs, Taiwanese, those who are failing God, who had their organs harvest, etc. Dominic, you've seen some, you know, transnational oppression in New Brunswick. That's playing out every day. You know, talk about it. You talked a little bit about that experience with one of your constituents. How do you see governments taking action to protect the rights of all of our citizens?
Well, I think the first thing is it comes back to us as citizens. Next election campaign, ask your federal and provincial candidates, have you received anything from the Chinese Communist Party? Have you gone on a paid trip to the People's Republic of China? If you did, what did you do? Why did you do that? Bump the issue up. Because one of the reasons that this has flown under the radar for so long is it is literally far away. And for provincial politicians especially, it seems even more distant. And I know the island, it's like back home. You're talking about small constituencies, a few thousand people. Most of the folks running to be your provincial representatives are doing it to try and help out, build a rec center, or get the hospital upgraded, or the usual reasons people run for office at the local level. You can't expect them to have the level of knowledge around this file that the gang of us do, because it's being part of our lives for different coincidental reasons. So it's up to you, as folks who are aware enough to spend St. Patrick's Day afternoon talking about this, to raise this with your politicians, the same way that we raise issues around hospitals being closed or kids not being able to read. So unless we make this important, the politicians aren't going to think it is important. Because if our politicians have one great failure in the early 21st century, is that all they do is read the polls and try and figure out how to get ahead of them, and that there's a serious absence of leadership and efforts to really change things. So push as citizens, but the next thing, even more difficult. If you get folks like that elected, you get what's going on, you get why this is dangerous, that is going to mean a change in your standard of living. This is going to cost us. We are not going to be able to separate from China and protect ethnic Chinese and other people fleeing dictatorships who come to Canada unless we have an economy that's based on democracies. And that transition is going to be hard. And it's going to mean things are going to cost more. It's going to mean disruptions and delays in getting the things that we're used to getting faster and cheaper. That is going to happen. And if any politician tells you otherwise, they are lying to you. So demand honesty from your politicians about the costs of freedom and democracy, and make it clear that you're willing to make that payment on behalf of future generations. That is the only way we get out of this. And it means, in a democracy, us accepting the sacrifice that is going to come. Because better to have that be a sacrifice we make through more expensive or difficult to get products than having a loss of freedom and the destruction of our country, or, God forbid, young Canadian men and women being called to fight on battlefields anywhere in the world. Countries across Europe are reintroducing conscription this week. Russia is able to prosecute its war in Ukraine because of Chinese backing. There are countries that are introducing universal conscription for men and women, Denmark being one of them. When's that going to happen here? It's going to happen when we let things slide to the point that that's our last recourse. Right now, we are still a lucky country. We are still privileged to have a bit of time. But not long. Demand more from your politicians when we have a chance of getting out of this. We have to show that democracy works by the citizens in democracies insisting on change. And that only comes from you.
I'd love to continue a little bit on what Dominic has just said, because very, very simple. You know, when you compare political system, dictatorship is damn efficient, really, really efficient. You don't have a say. You can go really, really fast because you do whatever you want to do. You're the dictator and everything. So what goes with democracy is and dictatorship are two different words. Dictatorship, opacity. It's opaque. You don't see things. Democracy, it's accountability, transparency. And that's how we need to be capable to sort of, that's what we will defend and we must defend. We need to be capable. Unfortunately, it took place. I'm not saying that you're living in a dictatorship in the PEI, but it was very opaque. It was very, very cloudy. People were not able to see exactly what was going on. If you were blue, you were blue from generation, you would stay blue and you would wait until your blue party comes to power. If you were red, you would stay red all your life and you would wait until the other one. And then you would make as much as possible benefit of that 5 or 4 years in that journey. Do not tolerate that anymore. Do not tolerate that.
I'll sort of shut this side of it down very quickly. I won't say I was sitting around the table the other night having a couple of drinks, but I was sitting there listening to it. And I said to everybody in the room, I now know how people must have felt when Hitler came to power. We were sitting there talking about the democracy, what's happened here in the PEI, what's happened in the rest of Canada. And I thought, isn't this sad? We had two world wars where everybody fought for freedom, and now we're talking about the risk of our freedom. And I honestly can say that's how I felt. I don't want to ever feel that way again, so I will be very vocal on this going forward.
So
we have a couple questions.
I think I need to take a breath. I think we all do. The room is very quiet and still. I have five questions, none of which I'm going to ask, because they've all been answered by the panel. You've answered every one of the questions I brought, but I do have one left, and it's for you, Dean. When will the book on PEI be released?
No, soon enough. So our journalistic investigation continues gathering data. We'll be busy writing the book over the summer. My hopes is that we launch this book out by the end of this year, probably November. But give me a call. You have some information to share. You have some evidence. You have some insights. I'm happy to hear from you. And that will help make a really, really good book. I think we have enough data already to make a really good book. But your participation all in this room and those that we met are going to make that difference. So I'm hoping to bring it out by the end of this year, 2024, I think we're in 2024, yeah.
And we'll hold you accountable to that.
Oh, there you go. Well, these guys are going to be writing it as well, so, you know, I'm going to put some pressure on those guys.
Thank you very much.
So, Eileen, you have some honest questions.
Yeah, so we were going to use index cards and have you write them, but that's not possible, nor is it probably ideal. So what we'd like you to do is if you have a question, we'll probably take, what, three questions, four questions?
Three or four questions, yes.
Three or four questions. If you have a question, I'd like you to be very succinct when you ask it. Not a lot of commentary, but really clearly ask your question and the panel, and address it to one of the panelists if there is someone you want to address your question, answer your question. We have one microphone here. You will need to use a microphone, and so I will find you somewhere in the crowd. Just raise your hand. We already have one woman over here on the left. And if you want to come to me and I will come to you, I will pass this off to you.
A meeting of the minds.
Also say your name. I'm Grace Cameron from East Point. I'm sad, I'm angry, I'm a little sick to my stomach about what I've heard here this afternoon. And I'm essentially being asked to believe, horrifyingly, that my Prime Minister, all of the MPs in Canada, and all of the MLAs, with one exception, are on the take. That flabbergasts me. And I'm, in a sense, greatly. So my question, and perhaps Mr. Carter, you could address this first. Is it automatic that as soon as somebody says, I'm a politician, that I walk through the door of corruption? How do I know that that person that I'm voting for is going to or has walked through that door? And in your case, how do we get them to go through the door of non-corruption? What can we do, and I know it's about accountability, and also how do we get the people that are not here this afternoon, but who live in PEI, to begin to ask the question, because I'll quite frankly think that sometimes we're our own worst enemy.
Just quickly before you, I even think that not all politicians are corrupt. And I want to make that very, very clear. There's dedicated individuals that serve this island, serve this country, that continue to do that with dignity and with integrity and objectivity. So no, we're not talking about every politician here. So that's what I'm talking about. Thank you. Donald.
But I think to combine in your comment with the question, the problem isn't individual so much. Because I've had the chance to, I've been a member of two established political parties, as leader of the New Brunswick NDP, and then a progressive conservative cabinet. Might seem a bit weird, happy to talk about that with anyone who wants to act. But now we're leading a new federal political party based actually largely on trying to stop things like foreign interference and make sure things actually spend some money on defense, which would be nice given we're at war. But that's also another story. Happy to talk about that with folks later. So it's not so much individuals who are personally corrupted. It is a system that is prone to being corrupt. Because weirdly, in Canada, a caveat is my first country I worked overseas was Bangladesh, which at that time was generally seen as being the most corrupt country in the world. It was a great editorial cartoon of an Olympic podium with the Bangladeshi standing in the number one place and passing a bribe to the judge behind it, which I thought was a great illustration of corruption. But that was a country where people got rich off being in politics. Most Canadian politicians, when they leave office, sell used cars, go back to doing what they were doing before. The opportunities for most of them to make money are very small, even if they did want to. And so that's a really important caveat, that we do not have hundreds of corrupt politicians. What we do have is people who are reacting with the same shock that I saw on the faces of some of the folks in this crowd this afternoon who haven't heard some of this information before, because it sounds crazy. And was saying to a couple of folks on the stage before we started that it was, for me, it was really only the beginning of this year that it felt like finally there's been a bit of a flip, a switch flipped. People are getting that maybe this war in Europe is kind of a big deal. Maybe China is actually much more of a threat than we realize. So what I ask you to do, as folks who get what's going on, is first off, be kind. I thought that our opening up to China in the 80s was the dumbest thing ever because I'm a Democrat, I always have been, and I think dictatorships are repulsive and democracy shouldn't trade with them, full stop. It was the biggest mistake of our lives to trade the wealth of our democratic inheritance with people who use that wealth to murder their own citizens. A huge flaw, and I think it will be seen as one for generations. But that was what everyone thought for, nearly everyone thought for a long time. So we should all be in the spirit of the people trying to convert people to their religion. We should be open to new conflicts. So if someone says, I get it, whether they were a cabinet minister, an MLA, an MNA, local councillor, give them the chance to repent and show their repentance through action. And that action, though, should come, I would suggest, through some concrete steps. Support a foreign interest registry in Canada. We don't have one. It's utterly insane. It allows people to come down to the provincial level and exert influence in a way that most countries would view as totally unacceptable. Ask your federal representatives where they stand, for example, on banning TikTok, a platform owned by the Chinese government. The Americans are finally getting on track with banning it. We need to follow suit because it is undermining democracy to the point that we are poisoning a generation of young people with anti-democratic ideals and with ideas of self-harm and destruction that are causing suicides across our country. There's a reason China doesn't allow a Chinese software platform to operate in China, because they know it's dangerous. So why on earth do we allow it to be unleashed on our own citizens? So ask your representatives to live up to the standards that we're talking about here. Foreign interest registries, banning inappropriate platforms, acting against land purchases that are clearly against the don't believe the promises. Ask for evidence of action, and if someone doesn't act after they've said they will do something, don't vote for them again, whether it's for building a new hospital or promising to act against foreign interference. We've got to stop the democratic backsliding that we've seen in the last 20 years, part of which is nothing to do with foreigners. It's about us losing confidence, losing expectations for our politicians. Demand more from people who ask to sit in the seats that I occupy right now. Demand more, insist on more, and punish the ones who don't deliver. But don't let them get away with your low expectations. Demand more. That would be my message.
And Ainsley, I know you've heard me beat the drum on this one. I'm a proud ex-member. I had help. But you know what? We got to change here. We don't have a federal force capable of taking on national, transnational organized crime. What is going on with China? Because citizens, provinces are insisting we keep this lovely red surge in your province. It's a contract. We need federal policing. And by you keeping your contracts and demanding them, federal policing will never, ever be able to take on what we're dealing with today. We need an FBI, we need a DEA. And believe me, if you don't get it, we don't get it, we are going to continue to pay a price like you've never seen before. We are the number one place in the world for transnational organized crime to park in. Why? Because we're a sieve. That's why you're experiencing what you're experiencing. Wake up, because fentanyl is going to rape and pillage your province coming out. And what it's going to do, and I did this on a media presentation, your hospitals, you think they're backlogged now on a weekend? Wait till you start the fentanyl crisis and all the overdoses going in on a weekend, and every 3 to 4 people have to look after that person that's overdosed. It will shut down your emergency department. It's time we did something.
Before we talk about this, who is the largest private
transnational organized crime groups call their headquarters somewhere in Ontario. There's a number more in Vancouver. This has been highlighted in the House of Commons security report in 2022. The information is there. The knowledge is there. The understanding is there. It's just what, you know, it's actually getting the force to work with to actually interject and make things happen and stop what's going on. Michelle?
I'll skip. We'll go for the next question, yes, because I want to give a chance to have more questions.
Thank you. And in Irish, from St. Patrick's, Gia Ditch. I'm a veteran, 24 years in bit service in the Canadian Armed Forces. I used to work in the Diefenbunker.
Thank you.
I called my former member of parliament from all that, and I said, what's going on with these Chinese and the land transfers? And I think I'm seeing money laundering. He said, oh, I called CSIS about it. Wait a minute, CSIS doesn't look at that. It's FinTrack. And I looked up FinTrack, and I contacted them. And they even have a rule that if you grass somebody, they're going to give your name out. So it's very difficult for people to report things and then to have a follow-up. If you know that you accuse someone anonymously, but your name will be revealed. So there's a lot of other things that have to be done. Now, I did call FinTrack. I also called my member of parliament. But what we have to do now is find another way to hold them to account, because it's only every 4 or 5 years you vote the voters in or the voters out, and you still get the same thing. So what do you recommend?
On the comment on reporting to FinTrack, it should be the RCMP. FinTrack is the intelligence arm. It requires financial institutions and other sundry groups that are mandatory reporting. I still, because I will file, I filed, I don't know how many, probably close to 100 reports since I left the RCMP. Reports have been given to me on real horrific stories on Iran. I think I've discussed the Kingston with you a few times on what's happened on York Street. I did file those, but I filed them with an anonymous source, never with the source. So there is ways of doing it. FinTrack, you have to understand, they're not enforcement. They're strictly an intelligence arm. They have a big computer system, puts all the linkages together, and if they reach a reasonable suspicion, it's given out to some law enforcement agency and or ceases if it's a terrorism occurrence. So don't overestimate what FinTrack does. FinTrack has done a great job. I am now part of my bank. We paid for them. We paid for their the cost because the banks got hit. We pay all the compliance costs now, starting this year for FinTrack. So we'll probably be regulated more because they have to justify their existence. FinTrack does a good job. But the analogy I use, we built FinTrack. Great, it's a Rolls Royce. What's going to drive that is prosecution and enforcement. We forgot the engine, and that's prosecution.
On Gary's book launch in Ottawa, one of the directors of FinTrack was there. We've had discussions since with the Director of Intelligence with respect to what's going on, and Sam Cooper, Willful Blindness, which is, of course, a book that I published specifically on the transnational organized crime here in the country, and these two gentlemen were very much part of that book, and that's how I got to know them, was because of that book. And if you want to know why we're having an inquiry, first of all, the Cumming Commission, now an inquiry in Ottawa, it's because of the books, because of the push by certain journalists in this country that are pushing the envelope against the politicians. So that's what has to happen.
Thank you. I want to keep my time very short and invite everybody to be short because I want to hear it from the IA. CSIS is not a law enforcement organization. CSIS does not have power or arrest or prosecution or anything like this. The RCMP does. Unfortunately, in 1994, Mr. Trudeau's father made the intention of the state to create CSIS, and we should not have a CSIS, we should have a law enforcement like the RCMP, being able to prosecute, just like the FBI has. But if you want something, you need to go to the RCMP. That's where something could happen.
Next question.
Hello, my name is Trish Bruce. I have a little question here. Well, first I want to make a statement. I find an awful lot of Islanders are oblivious to what's going on here.
And a lot of people around the world are oblivious.
They're completely oblivious, and like you said before, you vote red or blue, alternating, but why are we being squelched? Why is none of this in the news? CDC doesn't cover it. Nobody covers it. Why are we being informed of what's going on? They're treating us like we're stupid. I'm happy you're coming out with a book on PEI. Please give out free copies to everybody on the island.
Hey, I'll do a lot of freebies all the time. I hope you're not able to spend $20 on
it. Anyway, the only reason I know anything about any of this is because of David Wheel.
Ainsley has gone above and beyond. You've gone above and beyond. I have a couple other journalists that have gone above and beyond. And they will tell you how many times have I called you on story after story. Because I'm not in politics. I can't get an audience. So I agree with you. Don't ask me about CDC. I have my own opinion. I'll leave it at that. But you can get, there are some phenomenal journalists out there that I think have done a service. They're here today and they're here for one reason. They want to get the story.
Federal bill for a
better state. Nice note to the head of CDC, emphasizing why they should show up. Michelle, Michelle was spoke with the French language, PEI, and they gave him 15 minutes on Friday to talk about this.
Absolutely, and I want to be careful because I echo what Brian just said. There is some fantastic journalism being done in Canada, and matter of fact, it's our last line of defense in many cases. We need them. We need the journalists. So just to paint everybody with the same brush, just like I don't want to paint all the Chinese with the same brushes. We have to be very specific. But yes, unfortunately, as part of the investigation, we did find out that there is realm of influence that are exercised by what we call, and you heard that before, the backroom boys that are really manipulating the straw men that have been elected. And they are there to manipulate also, unfortunately, some of the media. Not all the media, but some of the media. Some of the newspapers that you have on this island are not present today. Why?
I just want to just quickly address that, because I think the point around the media is really important. Because the media are trained to look to who when it comes to questions of international politics? The politicians. In New Brunswick, I got wall-to-wall coverage for the stories about the Confucius Institute that I talked about earlier, all the way through. Afterwards, some real digging done by people from both the Telegraph Journal and CBC, and CBC French as well. The problem is the politicians keep on not realizing this is a problem, or in some cases are actually complicit. But most of the time, it's because someone turned up at their office and said, man, you wouldn't want this law to go any further up, because that could really affect the sale of sea urchins or whatever else. It's trying to put that bigger context in front of the politicians, which with the information that's been shared here and the books that Dean has got for sale at the back, that's the ammunition they need to be able to better defend your interests. But there's no one out there offering politicians training schools. They're just folks like you, they get elected and they go to work the next week. I got a half-day session on how not to sexually harass people in the workplace, a half-day on how to fill in expense forms, very important for a politician, and that was it. That was it. That is the training that people are getting to run multi-billion dollar departments. So increase your expectations of the politicians, but make sure that you increase your expectations of yourself as a citizen to give them the information that they you think is important, because you can't expect them to get it from anywhere else. I think once they get it, the record across Canada has been pretty good. That we do see the conversations around foreign interference at the national level that we would never have seen a couple of years ago, because people are starting to get mad. So get angry, but most importantly, get informed and inform the decision makers so they can make better decisions on your behalf. Okay.
Unfortunately, we're only going to have time for two more questions. So many people have questions, some who are sitting in the audience and those who are standing up and speaking. We will have index cards at the desk out front. If you want to write your question down, as Dean has said, they will be answered on the Optimum Publishing website.
Well, let me ask a question, Joan.
Yes.
Are you people willing to stay for a few more minutes?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
All questions, the four questions that are there, standing right behind.
Okay.
Let's do that.
Right.
Five.
All right. Hello, my name is Randall Myers. And just to counter the first question person there, I'm nor shocked or scared of any of these fellows that think they're going to overthrow us. It's all becoming very clear across the country and around the world, the interconnection between all the different corrupt corporations and governments. My question to you is, what is the connection between the CCP and the WEF? Because you talk about interference, it's all around interference.
I'll start on that one. This is a very complex. There is effectively really nothing at all. I think that conspiracy theory that's been perpetrated in right-wing media outlets for a long, long time. A lot of the work that the WEF and those that attend that conference every year are looking out for the best interests. Now, that's not that each country or nation has interests, and corporations have interests. No question about it. But they're not there to do some underhanded thing for anybody.
So why do they attend? Why do the people that we know we voted for, yeah, and our heads of CEOs, why do they go if there's no power to be gained or money to be gotten?
Because it's a network opportunity. Anyway, that's not the answer.
World Economic Forum is a Kiwanis Club for rich people.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is the Kiwanis Club largely for rich people from Western democracies. The attacks on the World Economic Forum, which I couldn't care less about, it is one of many international institutions that have grown up since the Second World War that are increasingly ineffective because they've lost track of some of their key needs to represent the public, which is why they get exposed to criticism. But the attacks on the World Economic Forum came from Russia. That's just a fact. You can look it up. The origins of the attacks on a lot of that you see circulated in a lot of the right-wing online communities in North America in English come directly from the dictatorships that we're sitting here complaining about. Anytime anyone tells you there's anything wrong in Canada, look carefully about who's telling you that. If they start to say that our economy, our corporations aren't serving us, our governments, our corporations, with all of the problems that we're talking about here today, have given us a higher standard of living than anywhere else in the history of our planet, and we should be proud of that, and we should be defending it, and we should be saying, yes, we want corporate reform, yes, we want political reform, but we are not going to stand for some crew of dictators sitting in some foreign capital, spreading lies through the internet that we invented, that we have yet to figure out how to control to stop lies from being thrown back at our kids.
but we're not going to take that attack on our capitalist democratic system that has given us more wealth, more equality, and more prosperity than anyone 100 years could have even dreamed about. We live like kings today compared to 150 years ago. And those folks who are representing governments where most people don't have indoor plumbing, they can get lost with their foreign propaganda stripping away our rights and our freedom. So, sir, my message to you, don't believe Russian bullshit.
Thank you so much for this afternoon backgrounder on the CPP and influencing this country, and I agree that we have a terrific country and we need to defend both our country and democracy. I would also like to say that I've had a personal interest in Tibetan Buddhism since I was in my early 20s, and I was very pleased when I heard Tibetan Buddhists were willing to present an island. I've always wanted to go to Tibet. They came to me. And that was very exciting, but I'm very, very disillusioned. And the question that has not been addressed here this afternoon, and I think I'm speaking for many, many people in this room, because we came here because we want to know, who is Bliss and Wisdom and why are they here?
Everybody in this room wants to hope that we can do something, or that Canada can do something with an enforcement action. We would be, and I can tell you, because there's something I will listen to her say yes.
What's your name? Grace.
I will listen to her and say
tell Kevin that.
I
send, God bless you.
Sufficient information about the criminal investigation. I will say no more, because I am hoping to get the relevant amount of police to do what I think they should do. I do know, as you know, with our disclosure laws in this country, we do not want to jeopardize the potential for a criminal investigation. So also you can take my word, is there enough that I think for an informed criminal investigation? Yes, I do. If I was sitting in my chair where I sat before, I would have no comment about launching an investigation. I cannot, in good conscience, go into detail on that because I would jeopardize a criminal investigation.
Good afternoon, guys. Thanks so much for being here and sharing this information. It's awesome to see so many people here. I had no idea there was this many people who realized what's happening. My question is pretty simple. It's less about China and more about you guys. Who are you guys that we need to trust? Dominic just said Russian disinformation is a thing that we need to fear. Not so much you, Dean, you're a publisher. I don't really know a whole lot about you, sorry. But these guys, CSIS and RCMP, are two of the most corrupt organizations in this country. They investigate and spend hundreds of thousands of dollars investigating pastors who have church in the woods. When there is corruption with China going on in this country, and that's despicable. And I literally consider Dominic Cardi to be one of the top five worst politicians in this country. While standing on the stage telling us that China is bringing in poison, he demanded that our kids inject themselves with an untested poison just to place the bullets. So who are you guys? You can laugh all you want, and you can say who all you want. Who are you guys that we should trust? Well, I'm willing to trust you if you're honest. I guarantee you half the people in this room know you. Who are you guys and why do we trust you?
Well, I tell you who I am. I'm an open book. You ask me any question about my life, my background, what I spent my time doing since I've been a kid. I value the life that I have as a Canadian, able to live in freedom that most people can't dream of. And as an adult, I've done my best to try and serve my community and serve the broader cause of democracy around the world. And I stand for science. I stand for reason, I stand for the Western tradition of enlightenment values, and I'll stand against those, both against, as the old line goes, against the enemies, both foreign and domestic. Because there's a problem inside our country these days that we have allowed, under the guise of free speech, we have allowed people to abuse free speech in Canada by spreading lies about our system,
by spreading lies about our government, taking things that are absolutely wrong. There are absolutely problems with the RCMP embassies. I'm the first to say it. I used it as an example. I gave evidence of foreign interference in CSIS and nothing happened with it. But that's because the politicians didn't do anything with it. And that's because all of us voted for it. So that's the problem with democracy, is in the end, if we're going to be honest about it, we've got no one to blame but ourselves. And we've got folks, the folks who want to talk about some of the issues that you raised. The problem we've got there is you guys are swallowing hook, line, and sinker conspiracies and misinformation generated by, and I'll happily, I love doing this stuff, I'll happily sit down with you this evening for a couple of hours, and I will run through the sources of each of the pieces of misinformation that you've been repeating here today. Because what we just heard this gentleman say, he was talking about a bill that I had in New Brunswick to remove exemptions for conscience from childhood vaccinations. Kind of interesting today, without those protections that we're seeing in resurgence in measles across the world. I wonder why that is exactly. Because what we have in the West was a vaccine system based on science, evidence, and reality that saved the lives of millions of normal people. Not the rich, not the wealthy, not the powerful, but normal people like us, like you, sir, and your kids. And we are throwing that away. And we are throwing that away. Because we have people operating themselves as agents of foreign interference, like this gentleman here today. And it's time we said no to China, no to Russia, and no to their fellow travelers and useful idiots here in Canada. That's what I'm here for. I will note that the gentleman who asked us who we are is not even bothering to stay to listen, because that's the way the dictatorship is supported by all
How are you doing?
Good.
Brian.
Brian. Oh, how you doing? How are you doing? Some facial.
I just got here.
Oh, yeah.
My name is Mike McCormick. I live down in Cardiff North. I'm a rural resident. I can't thank you enough for what you're coming here and taking home with you and the volume of people here. So what's going on?
Good for you.
Excuse me. I'm a representative of the Biden Party.